And here comes Paul Kersey, who's with us right now. Paul's the Director of Labor Policy for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. We're talking to him this morning about the big thing that I think we spoke with Kevin Elsenheimer about on Monday a little bit, was the discussion about Michigan's prevailing wage law conversations. Let's say hi to Paul right now. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
Appreciate you being with us today, my friend. How are you?
Oh, holding up all right.
I imagine so. Well, there's always something to keep Paul Kersey busy, isn't there? It just seems like there is so much, correct me if I'm wrong, on a general statement before we get into that specifically, but there is so much stuff going on as far as regulation on business. It's like, I can't imagine sometimes why people put businesses in Michigan. It's like, you can't turn around without some kind of rule in your face.
Well, it is a tough climate to build a business in, and that's part of the reason we're in the situation that we are in right now. Usually, when a business struggles, like the auto industry or the steel industry in Pittsburgh, what'll happen is that you'll have people laid off, and other employers will come in and pick up the people that were laid off. Well, that's not happening here, and that's what's really making our situation unique. It isn't that there are layoffs happening in the auto industry. It's that there are no other industries coming in and saying, let's pick up these people that are jobless and let's give them work to do.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's causing a real stink and all over the place, and because nobody wants to be in this business climate.
Mm.
And it's a problem. And I think part of it has got to be things like this this prevailing wage law. Let's talk about that a little bit. Exactly what's the story on this?
Well, Michigan has a prevailing wage law. It's extremely restrictive. Most states have some sort of prevailing wage law. Whether that's wise or not, that's a whole other question. But Michigan's is particularly restrictive. Michigan's explicitly calls for union rates. Other states' prevailing wage law will at least try to set an average rate for the whole construction industry. So basically what you have is a situation where the law says that whenever state funds are used on construction or whether the state supports it, for instance, the state will back the bonds that a lot of school districts use to fund construction. Even the state doesn't actually spend a whole lot of money on that, but because they back up the bonds, the prevailing wage law applies. And that means that all workers on that construction project must receive union wage scales. And that drives up the cost of construction by, we would estimate, and this is being fairly on the safe side, by around 10%. It could be higher, 15, perhaps even 20%. But 10% is the estimate that we would go with. That adds, we would figure, about $250 million every year to the cost of state and local government in Michigan.
With that in mind, it's a specific cost. It's, for example, if it costs you to do $20 an hour to have somebody build in Detroit, that same charge is going to be up here in the north for that particular project, even though prevailing wage in the local area could be much different.
Well, it is broken down by counties. So if the union wages, that's the key. If the union wage in Traverse City or Muskegon is lower than in Michigan, then you don't have to. Than in Detroit, then you just have to pay the local union rate. But the union rates, on average, are anywhere from 40 to 60% higher than the average for the marketplace, and that is what drives up the cost of construction.
So is this a good thing because we're trying to keep employees making a decent wage, or is it just a gimme to the unions? What do you think on that?
Well, it's not really necessary to ensure that most construction workers get a good wage. That's one of the myths that gets spread around about this thing. If you look at the entire Michigan workforce, everything from doctors and lawyers to waitresses and retail clerks, you've got an average hourly wage in Michigan of about $17, $18. Well, the average wage for construction workers, and we're talking about the whole construction workforce, union and non-union, is about 28% higher. Meaning you're talking about people who are already just in the marketplace earning an above average wage. And now you're saying, we're going to take these people who receive above-average wages, and we're going to boost their wages anywhere from 40 to 60%. And when as a result, what the prevailing wage actually means is that there's a whole lot of waitresses and retail clerks that are earning 10, 15 bucks an hour, and they are paying extra in taxes, so that construction workers who earn on average around $25 an hour will receive a wage when they're working on state construction of $35 an hour.
How did this all get started? I mean, did this just start incrementally a little bit at a time, or was there a big movement on this at one point? How'd this break down?
Well, the genesis for prevailing wage laws was probably the Davis-Bacon Act, which was passed during the Great Depression. And what happened there was you had a lot of poor, very poorly paid construction workers coming out of the South to work to work in the North, and because they were used to low wages, you know, they were used to accepting a low wage. Construction companies that were willing to make that move were able to underbid the local construction companies fairly consistently, and that was the real genesis for it. Was protecting higher paid, and again, more often than not unionized, but definitely higher paid northern construction workers from competition from lower paid southern construction workers.
You know, what's amazing on that is here states were doing that to protect their own from other states, and yet we, and this is a separate issue, but if you look at it on the international scale, we did the same thing when we started promoting NAFTA-GATT and other programs like that in the first place.
Well, not necessarily, because what you're talking about with NAFTA and GATT is more likely to be, I mean, there's some of that, but what you're dealing with NAFTA and GATT is the transfers of products, you know, anywhere from produce to electronics to manufactured goods. So you're not talking about construction, especially not in NAFTA and GATT generally.
No, not in construction, but I'm talking about as far as wages go. I mean, that's one of the big reasons people leave and send their factories overseas. They don't have construction costs, they don't have labor costs like they do in the United States. You also don't have Social Security match, OSHA match, or OSHA safety standards and so forth. And it's just comparable trying to find ways to save money and so forth.
Well, yes and no, but the thing is you also don't have the infrastructure, you don't have the roads and highway networks, you don't have the educated workforce that you have in the United States. The typical American worker is more productive than most of the other workers that are competing against them, and that is why American workers can earn the high wages that they do and still be competitive, because they because of the capital, the infrastructure, and the education. The education system that we have in this country, the average American worker is going to be several times more productive than workers in a lot of poorer countries.
Well, we've got to keep that in mind, too, as we go. There's no doubt about that. Now, as we take a look at this, when I was talking, I'm hearing rumors in Lansing that this prevailing wage law may actually be expanded to include other occupations instead of just those who do direct business with the government. Have you heard that at all?
Well, there is some talk about the governor's economic development plans, and that she may try to apply prevailing wage to that. I haven't seen much on that myself, but certainly if they try that, then what they are doing is they are minimizing the effectiveness of these programs even more. Mike Lefebvre from, you know, one of my colleagues here has done a great deal of work and shown that these government programs to encourage investment and encourage job creation don't work half as well as they're sold out to be. And if you attach a prevailing wage requirement to it, you are making these programs even less effective than they might otherwise have been.
How much does it cost? You used the example of schools. How much does it cost in Michigan on average? And I remember when I worked out of state, when I was in Missouri, the average cost of building a high school, according to all the regs and the regulations and so forth, was going to be a $20 million project to build a high school down there. How much would it cost up here? Is there a figure on that?
No, I don't have that figure available. A lot depends on the size and the type of the structure that you're building. You know, a larger high school for a large urban district is going to cost more than a smaller high school in a rural district. So it's going to vary a lot from project to project. But we found that the cost is fairly consistent In other words, it's going to be, you're going to be adding to the cost of construction regardless of whether the project is a small one or a large one. There aren't a whole lot of exceptions.
Is there any guesstimates as far as percentage wise, or does that also depend on where you're building at too?
Again, we would estimate, and this is going to vary a little bit depending on what the union's what the union scale is in your particular community. But we figure pretty safely statewide, 10% is a pretty safe figure.
And 10%, even using the figure I used, is $2 million, and it's right. Probably and it probably costs more to build in Michigan than it does in other states. So I mean, that's probably lowballing it here.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing: if it was $10 million for a project here, a project there. You know, 10% for a project here, project there, that'd be one thing. But you're talking about just about any serious construction project that involves state dollars. And there are also some local prevailing wage laws. So even if you're using local funds in purely say Detroit area, Lansing, any of those towns, there's going to be a local prevailing wage law that's going to kick in too.
So they can actually have you can have a state prevail wage law, and then the locals can make it even more broad?
Well, what'll usually happen is that they'll wind up either using the state scale or the federal scale, and it all works out the same. But the point is that even if you're not using state funds, there are some localities that have their own prevailing wage law, so you'll have prevailing wage costs even though they're not using state funds.
I'd love to know how far Michigan hits as far as the amount of regulation. There's got to be some figures on that. You would think we've got to be in the high numbers as far as regulation against business in the state.
Well, Michigan, aside from the prevailing wage law and the absence of a right to work statute, Michigan has a rather poor climate for environmental regulation as things stand right now.
I can imagine so. Paul, what's the mood in Lansing on this kind of thing? Is there a mood to do any kind of changes, or is this going to just kind of remain the way it is for now? I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, for the short term, I don't see any dramatic changes. For the longer term, I do see a lot more interest in this issue from the legislature. Again, the budget situation that we had has a lot of people wondering what we can do to make government more efficient, use tax funds more effectively. And so you're starting to see more people take a look at whether the prevailing wage law needs to be addressed, either reformed, repealed, or suspended.
So it's going to be now. Who's the ones who like to see some change in this? Well, I mean, what is there any names on this one yet? Or
well, I mean, Mackinac Center doesn't lobby for particular legislation, so
But your ears to the grindstone. You hear about people.
Well, I think you've got the people that you would normally expect that would be interested in these kinds of issues. People that are pro market, that support lower taxes. Associate Builders and Contractors did an article on this not too long ago in the Detroit News, and other business groups are looking at this.
I've always said, and I'd like to get your thought on this, being your labor policy analyst, you can relate to what I'm talking about, that Michigan, because of the fact that we're located with three sides of us on the Great Lakes, which means basically we're out of the shipping lanes almost in every aspect, we've got to, I would think, that to really make this state competitive, you've got to make this place a real tax haven like no tomorrow, and make this place just incredibly easy to start a business and incredibly friendly to business and so forth and so on, to really get businesses to take this area seriously because of the fact that transportation costs. I mean, when you put a factory in here or any kind of thing that needs to be shipped, with the exception of information technology, it's going to cost a lot more to do things here. Transportation costs are huge. You've got, $3 a gallon gasoline? Looks like it may go to $4 with the oil going so high and so forth. That's a huge expense that's going to be increased just by physically locating here regardless.
Well, Michigan's location isn't as big a problem as a lot of people make it out to be. This is in my humble opinion.
Okay.
The weather can be rough in the winters, but we don't have hurricanes, we don't have earthquakes, so that's a trade-off. The transportation costs aren't as great as you would think because the Great Lake port is still empty out. You can go out the St. Lawrence Seaway out to the Atlantic, so you can get into and out of the place okay. The problem right now, though, I mean, the state was prospering for decades, and we haven't moved since then. So I don't see that as the factor that is driving businesses away from us. What is driving businesses away from us is a bad labor climate, taxes that are higher than average, a regulatory climate that is unfriendly, and that's it, you know, it's it to a large extent our difficulties are really self-inflicted.
Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like you've got a lot of a rosy picture as far as the future on this one, Paul.
Well, again, I think in the short term, because of the makeup of the legislature and the temperament of our governor, there's not going to be a whole lot of progress. That's just being realistic. But again, I think over the longer term, I think you're seeing more interest in our labor climate, in right to work, and in prevailing wage reform and repeal. It's going to be a few years because we have to. We'll have to sort of change the climate in Lansing, but I think the understanding is getting out there that that Michigan's problems really are our own making. During the last budget crisis, the polls that came out showed that the public in the state overwhelmingly wanted to see the budget made up mainly with spending decreases, and with that in mind, I think that the longer term picture, there's going to be some opportunities a few years down the road.
You know, it almost has to, as we see new budgets come out and still have problems like we're going to see this year. It almost has to be cuts at this point, because I can't imagine that. I mean, there's already some recall efforts going on downstate that we're going to end up seeing legislators come back to the people and sock it to us again.
Yeah. Well, Governor Granholm basically conceded that she does not want to go through a tax increase again. Now, how she's going to follow through on that is another question, because the other alternative is to start streamlining state government, and if she does that, then a lot of people that support her are likely to balk at that. But right now, from what I'm seeing, I don't see a large scale tax increases coming anyway.
You know, when you take a look at that, though, too, I mean...
Again, that's just my personal opinion.
No, sure. Well, she is a lame duck and is being spoke of as a likely candidate for attorney general in a potential Hillary Clinton administration if it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it makes you wonder if the tough decisions become easier when you don't have anything to run for.
Well, it's hard to say. A lot depends on just how Governor Granholm decides to react to things, and that's not something I'm in a position to speculate on right now.
I don't think any of us are, to be quite honest with you. It's going to be interesting. How do the economies, and you mentioned that most states have some kind of right to work law. I mean, how are theirs set up as opposed to ours, and why is ours one of the worst in the country?
Well, most states will have some sort of prevailing wage law, but they will, like I said, they will at least make an attempt to have their prevailing wage law set at the market average for the construction industry. Now actually doing that, most states that try it wind up overestimating anyway. So they have higher costs. But like I said, Michigan's, because we don't make the pretense of having people go out and find an average wage in our construction market. We take the union rate, which is 40 to 60% higher than the actual average for construction workers in the state. The construction workforce, only about 20-25% of Michigan's construction workforce is union. So what we have is, and the other thing is that the construction workforce is becoming less unionized year after year. So what we have is not a prevailing wage. We're not paying the wage that is typical for the market in this state. If we did, then the cost would be much lower. Again, prevailing wage still would probably not be a good deal for Michigan taxpayers, but the damage would be limited. But because we have explicitly calling for the union rates, what we're actually paying is a premium wage that goes to a shrinking minority of construction workers, and we call that a prevailing wage.
When we see, we're talking about this as how it does with construction. Does prevailing wage laws affect other aspects too of the economy, or is it just mainly construction?
Well, the main factor in Michigan is construction. That's the one where we have the particularly restrictive law.
So basically, that's the one. So other issues, it's not like they do prevailing wage on kitchen workers at schools and so forth like that.
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't seen it. Now, again, what we have in government employees is we have a lot there's a lot of opportunities for saving there by privatizing the work, and that's if you want to see information on that, you can check out our website. You can check out our materials on prevailing wage at mackinaw.org. Mike LaFave, again, has done a lot of work on that.
When we see the national economy at least appearing to be taking some sputters right now, is that going to take longer for people in Michigan to really grasp that this is that this prevailing wage law is an issue because other states are going to be losing some jobs as well, or does that make it easier to be able to see because the ones they are getting are quicker to come to other states? I mean, how does that usually pan out?
It's hard to say because a lot will depend on just what the effect on Michigan will be. But one of the things that you could see happening is that Michigan's situation has been masked to some extent because a lot of our workers have been able to leave the state and find work elsewhere, and so a lot of the situation we have here is masked by that. People are looking for work elsewhere. They're moving on, our unemployment rate, for instance, doesn't go up as high as it might. You don't have you don't have the same situation with that. The problem is, though, that if the national economy goes into a recession, then people here are less likely to be able to find work elsewhere. Companies that are doing well in the state, there are a few here and there that are doing well. They're going to see their incomes drop. A lot depends on just how the state's economy and how the state government responds to it. But you could see a lot more pressure for fundamental reforms if the national economy goes into a recession. That's certainly conceivable.
Is it true that that we would be seeing unemployment being in the range of 11, maybe even 12%? I've heard rumors about that. If it was counted as unemployment, how many people have left the state and so forth? Is there any truth to that?
I don't know about 11 or 12%. I can say that if you did count people who left the state, the unemployment rate would be higher. Certainly,
we're also
Michigan has been losing population at a remarkable rate, among the lowest performers in the country in terms of population.
Hold that thought just a second to check on the forecast right now. It's weather on the O's. It's 8:50 this morning, 1270 WMKT and 1340 WNBN. High of around 20 with variable cloudiness today. Could see accumulations of around 1 to 2 inches tonight. Just flurries today. Tonight, 9 above. And then tomorrow, snow showers a little bit in the morning. Becomes partly sunny and a beautiful variable cloudiness is for it, but mostly on the sunny side all weekend long. Maybe a chance for snow on Mondays. We're talking to Paul Kersey, who is the Director of Labor Policy for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, as we continue our conversation on labor-related issues today. So what does the economy look like as far as with labor policy, labor-type issues? I mean, are we just going to keep seeing the unemployment just keep getting worse and worse here? I mean, is there a leveling-off point, or does anybody really know?
Nobody. Well, it's hard to say for certain because, again, we're not at this stage, Michigan is politically not ready to start doing the reforms that have to be made. We can look at in the longer term future and see trends working our way, but for right now we're not going to be looking at right to work. We're not going to be seeing probably much action on prevailing wage. And there's other things that are going on right now in the state. I had an article earlier today that just showed up on our website, www.mackinaw.org, about a union local in the Detroit area that had a number of problems. They had election problems. They had unfair labor practice charges. They were the targets of a scam. That's a part of the problem, because what you have are a lot of workers in the state that are members of unions represented by unions that are not accountable to them, and that complicates things for the state of Michigan, and that complicates things for employers.
Unfortunately, it didn't sound like that's going to get any better. Now, you mentioned that with the policies changing, that we're not ready for those kind of reforms. Is this just all going political right down the middle? I mean, it depends on who feels what, or do you think that there's lessons to be learned within the current batch of legislators we currently have?
A lot of it is driven by the political climate in the state, and while there are always going to be some people who will have an open mind, a lot of members of the legislature are going to be driven by the people that elected them, by their supporters, by their contributors, and so there's only going to be a handful of people that can really be reached at any given point in time.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's not a PAC group for the average worker in the state.
Well, here's the thing. There's so many different interests in this state and there's so many different groups of workers out there that it would probably be impossible to do a single PAC group that would represent the average worker. That's part of the problem with the union movement we have in the state. They present themselves often as the voice of workers. However, they represent a shrinking minority of workers in this state. And their ideology is frequently out of line with what a lot of people in the state are thinking, and because of that you have a group that is funded by mandatory dues that are collected from workplaces across the state, and they have a voice that is really outsized compared to the actual support they have among actual workers in the state.
So where does things go from here? Just a little short term, not much change. It's going to take a few years down the road, at least.
Well, I think one of the things you're going to see is there's continued interest in a right to work ballot initiative. We still see that issue coming up, and so that's definitely a possible issue for the people of the state of Michigan. Now, just to be clear, what right to work means is that an individual worker cannot be obligated to pay union membership dues or union membership fees. And what this does is it means that individual workers decide whether or not to support the union financially. It makes unions more accountable to workers. It cuts off funds that might be misused for a number of things, including political activism. And it makes the state more attractive to employers. And right now, we've got to think about what's really the most important. Is it well-financed unions or is it jobs for our workers? Well-financed unions with lots of money, depending on your point of view, that could be a good thing. Jobs for our workers, that's a gotta have.
Oh, no doubt about that. I think we can all relate to that one. If we want to learn more information on some of these things you were talking about today, what's the best way to do that?
Well, again, you're welcome to check out our website anytime, www.mackinaw.org. That's MACKINAC.org. And we've got an article up today on Union Local in Detroit. That's a story that doesn't get as much attention as it should in the national and state media. There are a number of unions throughout the unions and union locals throughout the state that really have some serious governance problems. We've got a story about one of them up there right now, and I'd invite people to take a look at it. You can also find out more about our tax climate, about our regulatory climate, and about our economic situation in general.
Sounds fair enough. I do appreciate it. Paul's been great talking to you today.
Well, thank you for having me along.